Right, welcome back to the 9 till noon show. Thank you for all your comments coming in. Just on the driving test, because I know this is one that's really frustrating for a lot of you out there. Good morning. There's one tester today. I believe that's in Letterkenny. Motorbikes only. No car tests are taking place. There were two testers on Monday and Tuesday. How are we ever going to get through the backlog or even stop it growing if there's no contingency for when testers are off sick? It's not their fault. They need the support. Extra staff. Four testers in Donegal, three in Letterkenny. There's none there today testing in cars, and only two on Monday and Tuesday, and 27 cancellations last week. That's a big, big problem. Right, OK, let's stay with the roads if you're lucky enough to get a test and get on the roads. We're joined now by Councillor Kieran Brogan. Good morning, Kieran. Thanks for your time.
Good morning, Greg.
It's a frustrating situation, isn't it, that with the people getting their tests and the issues in getting their tests. As I say, it's no fault to the testers. They just need extra staff and extra support.
Absolutely, very frustrating for the testers, and I actually feel for the testers, and they're trying their best under the difficult circumstances they're in, and especially in a county like Donegal when so many people depend on the road network. We don't have the rail service, we don't probably have the same public transport that many other places have, so people depend very much on their car and their test, and especially on ones going for jobs and stuff, is something that I would come across an awful lot. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure plenty of representations as well, but I do know councillors making representations are knocked back. They're given a default reply saying, look, it has to be fair, this is the way it is. And the days of sort of being able to influence it seem to be gone. But anyway, that's not why we invited you on. You're talking about active travel plans in Letterkenny. All well and good, great for the future, but seems to be for many the wrong thing now, just at the wrong time. What's your view, Kieran? You've raised this yourself.
Yeah, I'm very concerned. I suppose the one that I'm most concerned about, we have the short term, the medium term and the long term. And we have a scheme ongoing there now in the Convent Road in Letterkenny, and something that we as councillors have been advocating for some time, and for the improvements up around the school up there. But there's other plans now for the High Road from the hospital roundabout to the Primerica roundabout. And the one that I'm very concerned about now in the short term is the one from the Polestar roundabout over to the Thomas Keyes filling station at Ballyrain. It was supposed to go out for tender now shortly. But we as a council would have passed a party for that back in 2020. But over the last number of months when we were getting briefings on the design of that, the design has changed from what we as councillors would have approved, or as a council approved, back in 2020. And now they've introduced two cycle lanes on the inside carriageway from, you would leave the Polestar roundabout, going across the Ballyrain Halls.
Do my eyes deceive me, or is that road being proposed to go down to two lanes for the width of the hotel site?
That's correct.
Wow.
If you can envisage now, when you're leaving the Ballyrain Halls and you're heading towards the Polestar, which would now be the middle lane coming to forward, it's proposed to take out that middle lane to the far side of the Mount Argyll Hotel. And to me, that would just leave a single carriageway going back out. And we know on a daily basis that road is absolutely choked up. Mm. Whilst I've always believed that the signal junctions at the Ballyrain Halls and at Thomas Keyes would improve the traffic volumes, I don't think it's the right time to take away a third of the carriageway to introduce two bicycle lanes. That was not part of the original plan, so I'd be advocating, and I've asked the council to review the process at the minute and go back to the original plan that we had the party it for, because the cycle lanes and active travel is something I support, but I support it on roads that have less traffic volumes. That would have one of the highest volumes of traffic in the county, indeed the whole northwest. So I don't think this is the right decision.
This road, Kieran, and we'll tease it out a bit more, but, you know, if one of the, with the Polestar roundabout and the changes there, look, we're living with them and that's fine, but one of the big arguments was that really what you needed is a left lane that just goes out towards the Clanreagh. Do you know what I mean? So if you have no interest in heading straight on or heading right, that you can just go on this left lane and straight out of Letterkenny. But rather than that, which might help, who's to say, I'm not an engineer, we're actually taking another lane out and jamming two lanes of traffic into one lane on that road, which is almost quite the opposite of what might seem to be the solution to it. for how many bikes or and scooters that might be on that bicycle lane? Do you know what I mean?
And to be fair, myself and all of my council colleagues at different times over the last number of years would have been advocating that left turning for the traffic going out to the Port Bridge. And despite our best efforts at trying to I suppose, highlight that, the road design team haven't pursued that avenue yet. And now I've introduced this model here. And I don't understand what sort of support and documentation has brought about this model, but I think it's something that we need to look at, and we can't afford. There's too much traffic congestion in that part of Letterkenny. But the implications as well for business as well is huge, Greg. And I mean, the public consultation model, we have an obligation as a local authority to ensure that we engage in a proper way with the residents and the business people in that area. And by us going out in 2020 and having a public consultation on a particular plan and then turning around in 2024 and changing the plan without having the proper public consultation, it's not right and it's not a fair process. And I think it's important that we afford business people and the residents of the area a proper opportunity where they can feed in and have their submissions. So I think for now we should be reverting back to the 2020 plan.
Do you have any confidence that the installation of traffic lights on those two roundabouts, you know, at the student accommodation and the one up at Sweeney's a bit further on, do you have any confidence that those traffic lights might manage the traffic in a way that two lanes might do heading out past the hotel?
I believe if the cycle lanes wasn't as big of a part of it, that the traffic lights would work. I think the cycle lanes junctions do work. I think the technology today, the Polestar has worked well now with the new traffic lights. And I think most people would acknowledge that now. And there's a model that they have in place to do that. But I think by taking away the inside lane to allow for two cycle lanes, I think it's something that will puzzle many of the general public. And I think that's something that we need to look at again as a matter of urgency, because it wasn't included in the original plan. This has to be about traffic management on this occasion. And if, and you know, we are at an advanced stage now with the TNT and the Bunnagee link. It has been approved by Cabinet back in July, and we're in now to the detailed design of that, and it's moving forward. But if it was the case that you had your new bridge and all in place, it would be a different story, Greg. Yeah. But at the moment, so many people depend on just getting over that one bridge, the Port Bridge.
I can see what they're trying to do on that road, right, to widen it out, and people can see that widening work that's going on. The problem is it seems to be that they've run out of space and ideas between the likes of Screwfix and the hotel. They don't have the space and they don't have the ideas, and they're proceeding with it, even though it is clearly naturally creating a bottleneck. There has to be an alternative solution, because you can't say, right, we're widening out this road, we're having active travel, we're going to put lights on various roundabouts, and sort of ignore what's becoming a very big elephant in the room and this narrow bottleneck that there's no way to deal with outside the hotel.
Yeah, I mean, a lot of what I see nowadays, Greg, particularly since COVID, a lot of it can be desktop exercises, and that doesn't always work. I went out there for an hour last Saturday and watched and stood at the junction and watched the traffic manoeuvres that was taking place there. And I couldn't in any way envisage how they could manage to take away the single lane, because an awful lot of traffic comes in to use that middle lane heading in to the heart of the town. And I think by us taking that away and delaying traffic further, it'll be very detrimental to the businesses of the town, all of the businesses of the town. And I think at the moment we need to do whatever we can to support and improve the management of traffic in and around the town. And we can look at the cycle lanes further down the road, I think.
So who are we appealing to? Who are you appealing to here? Is this the council? Is it road plan? Is it TII? You know what I mean? Who needs to hear these calls and consider them?
We've had several workshops as a council over the course of the last number of months. I would have highlighted this back at a public consultation meeting when I first became aware of it, was the 17th of July. I raised my concerns at that time to the people in the road design office. I spoke to some of the residents in the area, and I also spoke to some of the business people in the area who weren't aware of this. And then the more workshops and discussions we had about it, they kept telling me that this was part of the original plan and it wasn't a material change. But I've sought my own advice and guidance on this, and I'm very clear that that is a material change from the Part 8 that was passed. Mm. Once you introduced the two cycle lanes, it wasn't part of it. So you can only imagine that the Part 8 that was out was about the traffic movement and the middle lane still being there, and all of a sudden somebody comes along doing a desktop exercise to introduce two cycle lanes, one going out and the other coming in, taking away the middle lane and trying to tell me and the rest of the people in the area that it's not a material change. Mm-hmm. I'm very clear in my mind that it is a material change. Therefore, the proper consultation hasn't taken place. And I'm suggesting, I've asked the Director of Services of Planning to review and have a look at this again. But I mean, in the short term, we should proceed with the traffic management, which would mean improving the two junctions immediately for traffic. And I think this is about traffic.
Yeah, I think because the yellow boxes are quite interesting too, because if you're pulling out of the aerial, for an example, the traffic heading back towards Remelton would not be sitting on that yellow box, but you're a long way back from the traffic that you need to be able to see, because you're behind the yellow box and behind two bicycle lanes as well. It does look a little bit to me like a desktop exercise. Kieran, just a question for you, if you don't mind. Can you or can anyone clarify if the back road, as in the Convent Road in Letterkenny, is being one way? And if it is, how in this world does it make sense making cycle lanes that are not being used? It's a ridiculous waste of money. Well, one part of that's an opinion, right? And we all have an opinions. But do we know at this point if the Convent Road is going to be one way?
No, it's definitely not one way. And in fact, the Convent Road will improve a lot of that area for pedestrians. And there's a lot of elderly people in the Convent Road. And I think it'll actually make it a lot safer for pedestrians and people coming and going from their homes in that area. And it has been a huge issue, particularly at the bottom of the Convent Road for a long, long time, that junction there, but making it more safer for pedestrians crossing over and back there. So I think the Convent Road will work out good. Mm. But I do think overall, when people talk about active travel, I think habits need to change around active travel. And I think schools have a huge role in that. And I've been advocating for some time that the people in the council and the road safety need to go into the schools to speak to the children, because we need to look at how habits have changed in that whole area as well.
I don't want to be controversial here, though. I mean, I'd prefer, like, I'm not anti-bikes or anything, but for a town like Letterkenny, that would be better off either as is or a bus lane. Because the one thing I've noticed driving around Dublin is there's cycle lanes left, right and centre. And this, I very rarely see anyone on them. Buses, definitely. Yeah, I mean, obviously public transport. But these cycle lanes often, and it could just be when I'm in Dublin, don't get me wrong, but this is a city with a massive population. Very few scooters, very few bikes on these bus lanes, and the rest of the city snarled up. You know, if we're talking about a town bus service, and we can squeeze a bit out of the roads, surely it'd be better to have it as a bus lane or something. I'm not proposing that, but you get where I'm coming from.
No, you're not so late, Greg, to be fair, because you're only saying what a lot of other people are thinking. I mean, I'll be supporting what you're saying 100% for bus lanes and possibly taxi lanes as well. But the cyclists, and I'm very friendly with a lot of cyclists, they're the people that's telling me that it won't work. And, you know, they see the new cycle lanes in the four lane. They don't use them because all the debris come off the main road and there's too many stones and glass and everything else, so they don't use them. So I think we need to listen to the people at the coalface who's out on their bicycles every day. And if they're not going to use them, then what's the point in splitting them in? And they're the people I've been talking to. I've talked to an awful lot of people over the course of the last number of months about this proposal here, because I always like to take counsel from different people to see what their thoughts are and to look at it on the ground. And everybody that I've been speaking to has telling me that this won't work, definitely won't work. And I think that's where we need to look at things again and change them, because these desktop exercises all look good, but the practicality never works.
All right, we'll leave it there. We'll see what happens from there. That's Councillor Kieran Brogan. It takes 12 hours plus to go from Medicise High Road to the Clanry Roundabout at 4 p.m. This needs addressing. I wonder, that must be minutes. It couldn't be 12 hours, could it? What about the 95-year-old oak tree? Is that going to be saved? I can't see, based on the current plans, how it might be. Who allowed this road to be planned in the first place? Or have they all been floating in bubbles in years? Traffic way back out to Dromore this morning at 8:45. It certainly is a puzzle how this mess has happened. I just anticipate that if they go ahead with these plans as it relates to outside the Mount Argyle Hotel, reducing that down to two lanes, it's going to be a bit of a nightmare, I think. Great historical discussion with Joe, as usual. I agree. Love chatting to him. And there's so much more in that in terms of, you know, names being anglicised and that type of stuff. But listen, we might come back to that. Right. General election candidate in Donegal for the Irish People's Party, Kim McMenamin, is with me now. Hi, Kim. Good morning to you.
Hi there, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Now, all the Big parties, I suppose, are releasing their policy documents on housing and on health, childcare and other measures. You have come up with an alternative solution, I presume you would see, as for the health service. Talk to me about it.
Yes, Greg. I have been a practicing acupuncturist for 24 years now. I studied in Dublin. It took me 3 years to get my qualification, and then I went and worked in hospitals in China. Now, what I saw out there in the year 2000 totally amazed me. They had integrated medicine. So in every hospital in China, I was in Nanjing, I was in the First People's Hospital there, a massive hospital. It's unreal the size of it because there's so many people, the population's so vast, that I saw firsthand the integration of traditional Chinese medicine, i.e. acupuncture, herbal medicine, in the hospital. And it worked so well that I'm thinking, right, okay, our health service is in crisis. Our health workers are under the reach and burnout, over 50% of them. So I'm thinking, like, how can, like, when I get elected, like, how can I implement some sort of, like, saving grace for our health service? And that can be done through integrated medicine.
How does it look, Kim? Like, I mean, I think you're also suggesting a pilot project based in this part of the world. But when you talk about integrated medicines, alternative medicines in an acute hospital setting, from your experience that you've seen, what are you talking about here? How does it look?
Well, in Guy's Hospital in London in the mid-1990s, there was a pilot scheme implemented where they had fully qualified, fully trained acupuncturists, and next, some of them were medical doctors as well, in the A&E department. So when someone came in, like, and they were in complete trauma, and they were in a state, say, they fell off a roof, or they were in an accident, basically, if they were in shock, acupuncture had, like, there is amazing acupuncture points to alleviate that naturally. So what that the conclusion of that there was that someone needed surgery, or they needed some medical intervention, that because it wasn't drugs that sedated them, because it was a acupuncture sedation points that worked, that they discovered that they could get people to surgery quicker, they could save lives faster. So, like, that really, really works. So that's one shining example.
How just in relation to that, Kim, I mean, obviously, sort of in the Chinese scenario, right, you've got sort of, you know, you've got a different culture, a different cultural approach to certain things, more reliance or understanding of traditional way of things, right? I'm just thinking in the ED down in Letterkenny, right, even if you had this pilot project, I mean, do you think anyone from Donegal who's in pain with a bad back or something like that there would opt or accept acupuncture for pain relief over, you know, morphine or something along those lines? So how does it, how do you actually introduce its usage if there's a public resistance to it?
Well, just imagine they were on heavy medication, right? The worst thing to do with someone like that would be to give them more medication. In that case there, acupuncture would definitely work great for pain management. It's unreal for pain management. Like, things like sciatica is the most severe type of back pain you can get, right? Now, doctors normally would tell people there's no cure for sciatica, and they would just send them away with anti-inflammatory medication. Well, I'm telling you now, that means they don't have a cure for acupuncture, but I do. So I've treated over the last 24 years hundreds of people with severe, acute and chronic sciatica. And it works amazingly. And I just think, you know, this integration of medicine is the way forward. Look, we're in the modern world now. Why do we not have, like, why do we not have it already? So once I get elected, I am going to be pushing these pilot schemes. And I am going to try and integrate traditional Chinese medicine into the hospitals. I'll tell you another story, Greg. Quan Chi is the most amazing herb ever. It's called the miracle herb, right? In the hospitals in China, they give people Quan Chi before they get chemotherapy, okay? And it protects the cells. It stops the immune system being compromised big time. And the people come out of chemo with their immune system intact, and they can now, you know, actually fight the cancer on a much higher level, and the success rate is unreal. China is just a shining example of 10-star medicine. It's unreal what they're doing over there. It's okay. Unreal. Why can we not have that here? Like, it's money cannot be, like, if we defund a lot of these NGOs, the ones that are like just sucking up money and not doing anything, we could save money from that sector and put it into a scheme like this. It would be easily implemented, in my opinion.
All right, we'll see what the public think. Thanks, Kim. Kim McMenamin there, candidate in the general election for Irish People's Party. He's proposing his alternative rescue plan for the health service, integrated or interrelated integrated medicine. Works well in China, as he says. Less drugs in the ED, looking at acupuncture and other herbal remedies, which he says have proven to be effective in the likes of China. Is that something you would subscribe to or be interested in participating in? 086 60 25,000. Hi, Greg. Regarding Sinn Féin's social and affordable housing policies that it's selling to the electorate, firstly, the chances of them being the lead party in government is almost nil. You know, I wouldn't be sure about that. I still think the favourites for government would be the current team of Fine Gael, Fianna Fáil and others. That being said, we've a lead into the election now, and we're starting to really have serious conversations, and I just wouldn't rule out them being the lead party. I'm not saying it's going to happen, I'm just saying. But anyway, they say there's zero chance of that, therefore they're unlikely to get their plans implemented. Secondly, they're continually stating they will provide 100% redress, but fail to specify that only one homeowner and those with one additional house are covered. Council tenants, commercial and community buildings are left out. Thirdly, regarding the affordable housing aspect of their plan, the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland has stated that banks are unlikely to provide mortgage for these houses as the state retains ownership of the land upon which the houses sits and are serviced. The one thing I'll say about that, fantastic that the Banking and Payment Federation of Ireland have given some clarity on the situation, albeit the opposition's proposals. I would love some clarification from the Banking and Payments Federation of Ireland as to whether repaired defective concrete blocked homes are mortgageable. How can they come out so quickly and poo-poo the opposition's proposals? We still have no certainty about the mortgageability of repaired homes, be them partial repairs, repaired on potentially faulty... sorry for hijacking your comment here, but it's just something that jumped out at me. Where's the clarity on whether people can mortgage their homes now, not what might happen if another party got into power? But anyway, the caller goes on to say it is sadly a pipe dream from career politicians akin to snake oil sellers in the Wild West. Non-establishment community-based candidates, they say, are the way forward. The Ballyhooly Road is prone to accidents, and they do not even put up a barrier when they were redoing the road. It's so dangerous, the engineers would need to go out and have a look at this. Another, a man over 80 who has a medical card was charged €60 for a 5-minute look from the doctors, checking his eyes and hands to prove that he can drive. How is this okay to charge a pensioner with a medical card €60? I had lights out. These are public lights. Reported them to that website that I mentioned, 1800 150 150. They were fixed within 3 days. Great service. I'm keeping a really close eye on Nocala up in Buncrana there. I'm really hoping that we can get those lights on for the weekend. In relation to paying priests for funeral, a fee for what? Fulfilling their vocation, asks a listener. Morning. There should be a crematorium in Donegal to facilitate a lot of non-believers who do not want the traditional funeral, just a celebration of life and not to be buried. A lot of it is a money racket. Well, there were plans for a crematorium that were stifled. I think the plans are going back in, but it's a bit of a problem in no one seems to want it close to them. Lovely calendars for Donegal Down Syndrome. Oh, Down Syndrome, Donegal. Eddie, a lovely little boy. That comes in from Mary Ferry. Eddie is was Debbie's son and one of the Anne-Marie's, nephews. Beautiful calendar. Go out and get your copy now and support Donegal Down Syndrome. And look at the wonderful pictures of our fellow Donegal folk. Absolutely stunning. Iris, you've been waiting long enough in the hospital without waiting for me. My apologies. How are you keeping?
I'm doing not so bad, Greg.
And am I reading this correctly, that you are currently in Letterkenny University Hospital?
I am a patient, yes, in the gurney ward. I've been here. This is my 10th day.
Wow. And why are you there so long? You're awaiting an MRI. Is that it?
I am awaiting an MRI, and I was admitted last Monday. I sat for 7 hours in casualty with no one looking at me. Casualty is absolutely ram-jammed morning and night. The nurses and doctors are run off their feet, and they obviously I had to wait, which is not a problem. I was taken on Tuesday, was seen on Tuesday afternoon, and I was taken for blood, then a CT scan. And after the CT scan was done, obviously something was seen, so I was taken then upstairs, was administered, gave me a bed eventually. And they had said then that I needed an MRI to check, to see what's going on. Mm. The staff here in the hospital, I have to say, are exceptional. They have done everything that they can to support me. They are ringing nonstop to the radiographers, and it is getting out of hand. This is my ninth day waiting on an MRI scan with no answers. It's very nerve-wracking because you don't know what's wrong with you. Although you know something's wrong, nobody's coming to explain to you what's going on.
Yeah, I mean, there's doctors here,
Greg, that are working 24 hours a day, that are having no sleep between maternity and gynae. They're running to do surgeries, emergency surgeries for people in this hospital. There is something seriously wrong here with the management team when they're allowing this to happen.
So I can't imagine what it must be like, because there's a few things going on here. Firstly, something showed up on the CT scan that triggered the need for an MRI. So the anxiety of what showed up and what potentially might be showing up or not in the MRI. But there's also sitting in a hospital bed that, I mean, do you need to be there for pain management, or could you be at home, Iris?
I could be at home. The pain that I have, I'm quite able to cope with. This is not a pain that I haven't had before. They can't really give me anything other than, like, I'm trying to walk about as much as I can. The pain is there, but the pain's been there for that long. It's not going to make any difference if I'm at home or if I'm in here, because without the scan, they can't tell me what's wrong. So I'm basically taken off a bed, maybe for another patient that maybe has something more serious that needs it.
Right. So who have you made contact with? Have you managed to get any conversation with management?
One of the staff nurses here has actually contacted the management yesterday morning and has said, like, that this has been going on too long, they need something to be done. I think basically it was ignored. I have contacted Sinn Féin, Padraig McLaughlin's office, and Sinead, and them have contacted also Sean Murphy again. They received an email from him, and basically he is very aware of the situation, and as of yet, no one has come to tell me why I haven't received that MRI.
Do you know if MRIs are MRIs happening? Like, is the MRI machine...
The MRIs are happening, and I have been prepped for MRI on three different occasions, but that means I need a cannula put into my arm. Unfortunately, the plasters are irritating me, so they can't leave them in for too long, because if they do, I get irritated and the cannula is removed. So basically, them girls are holding me as long as they can to put this needle in. Now, I was told I was having that MRI on Friday. It didn't happen. I was told I was having the MRI on Monday. It hasn't happened. The girls put a needle in me on Monday evening, and I am still sitting waiting for an MRI that still has not been done.
I mean, even an explanation would go some way to answering the questions, obviously, but it's not going... I mean, there is also an issue here. Maybe you need the bed, maybe you don't. We don't know that, but that is a bed that you've occupied for 10 days, and you've seen yourself on Monday, 95 people in casualty, you waiting 12 hours yourself. So there's clearly a need for beds. Why are you still in this bed? Get the MRI, get the treatment if you need it or not. And if you don't need to be in hospital, get you out of hospital at home and comfortable, and get someone into the bed that might need it more than you do. Maybe you do need it. I don't know. But you're in that space where you haven't a clue what's going on.
No, I am basically what they call, I am not high priority, because I have no diagnosis as of such. They are running MRIs, and they're running to maybe 8 o'clock at night. But the problem is with my MRI, I need a compound dye put through my system so they can highlight the tissues and everything that they can see the organs.
Mm-hmm.
And apparently they do not put compound in after a certain time in the evening, which I find is absolutely ridiculous, because this hospital, the nurses and doctors do not go home at 5 o'clock. They work here 24/7. So why can they not put that compound dye into me in the evening and allow the nurses and doctors to do their job?
It's okay. It's very frustrating, Iris. We're going to make contacts as well to find out what's going on. I know, as you say, you've been in touch with the general manager, Sean Murphy, and the offices of Sinn Féin. We'll make our inquiries as well, Iris, and stay in touch with you to see what the situation is. But it's cruel on you, but it also doesn't make sense in terms of an efficient health service. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
It's not even about me, to be honest with you, Greg. This is about the staff that's in here. Them nurses, them doctors. I know that people come here and they check this and they talk to management. That's okay, talking to management, and management know there's people coming into this hospital to check them. My opinion is this. Why don't they allow someone to come in here and talk to the patients, talk to the nurses, talk to the doctors that are run off their feet? They are the people that's running this hospital. They are the people that's on their feet 24/7 trying to care for people. It's not acceptable that the management in this hospital thinks that this is acceptable to do this to people. It is not. I am not the only patient in this hospital waiting on an MRI, and I am not saying that I am desperately in need of it, but I need to be investigated and not to allow me to go home.
Yeah.
Or okay. Do whatever procedures I require.
All right, Iris. Listen, as I say, we'll be in contact. Very, very poor situation. Thanks for your time this morning, and I hope you're as comfortable as can be. Thanks, Iris. Right, listening to Bridie that you had on earlier on, talking about Nocala Drive. It's a disgrace passing it at night. It's so dark, it's black. You can't see a thing. There's a little memorial at the top of Nocala where the lights are completely out for three boys from that street who passed away, and the families love to look at the memorial at night and they can't see it. It's awful. I did read that one out a little earlier on. Hi, Greg. In relation to the general election, I feel like the turnaround time is very short. I feel like it should be a longer canvassing period so everyone is getting a better picture of what each party is putting forward, along with a lot more debates televised, as this one, one of the most important decisions for Irish people. In relation to driving tests, I wonder how many of these tests were cancelled due to Joe Soap not turning up on the day. They might not have turned up as they didn't feel they were ready for the test. Well, I get you, and I know the RSA recently published figures, and they want to point the finger at the public, right? There's no doubt about that. There are cancellations that come up when people postpone. That's how we got Aaron's test quite quickly, because I was spamming the website and eventually got a cancellation in Donegal Town. But the bottom line is we know there was no test done by one tester for 3 days last week. 27 people didn't get their test. That's not people not turning up. We know there's no, we've been told there's no car driving test taking place today, and only two testers on Monday and Tuesday. That's not people not turning up. That's not people doing tests. Again, I just want to be really clear, because there's not many of them. They're stretched. They're stretched as is. This is about getting them extra staff and support. So, all right, we're going to be talking to our next guest in a moment. Now, our next guest is Paul Grant, who's HUG facilitator. That's H-U-G-G. Each year in mid-November, people who are bereaved by suicide come together globally to honour the memory of those who've died by suicide. As Ireland's national suicide bereavement charity, HUG, H-U-G-G, is inviting people to join them for a special remembrance event. It's in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel on Sunday the 17th of November, in Buncrana, that is, of course. And we'll talk about that in a mo. But I also just want to talk about the services provided by HUG itself. And I'll say good morning now to Paul Grant. Good morning, Paul.
Morning, Greg. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So tell us a little bit about HUG and the service it provides across Ireland.
Yeah, I suppose. Thanks for the introduction. Yeah, you're right. HUG is a national bereavement suicide charity. It started in 2018 when Fiona Toomey lost her 11-year-old daughter, Millie, to suicide. She basically went out and couldn't find any support groups around, so she started HUG. That's how it started. We are now the national suicide bereavement charity, and you know, I suppose our vision is one of hope and healing for anyone that has been bereaved by suicide. You know, anyone that doesn't want to walk this path alone. I've trained up as a facilitator to, I suppose, help people. It helps me as well, you know, in the meetings. And we're a suicide postvention service as opposed to a prevention service. And the difference to suicide prevention, it's different to suicide prevention, sorry, because it's designed specifically to reduce risk after a suicide occurs. I think there's something like 60,000 people per year that's affected by suicide in Ireland. That's obviously friends, family, you know, and there's a massive web.
So whilst in the first instance, this is about supporting people bereaved by suicide, we do know there are cases where if someone is close to someone who's died by suicide, this could be family members, but I often also be concerned about sometimes you see a spate of young persons passings following a suicide, right? This is about reducing as best as possible the increased risk of suicidal ideation amongst those groups that I talked of.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's, there's a lot of young people now, you know, that that's, you know, that's, yeah, to dying by suicide, it's an absolute, oh, it's terrible to see. It's terrible to see anybody dying by suicide, obviously, but yeah, younger people now are, I suppose, more susceptible to it. My own sister died in 2018 as well. Actually, she was 32 and she left two young kids behind, 3-year-old and 5-year-old. So, you know, we have to, I think, don't quote me on this now, but I think there's something like 33% more of a chance that they will, you know, die by suicide, either one of those, because they have been affected by suicide. So the chances increase because of that. So we meet every Tuesday. We have three teams up here in Donegal, or three locations, one in Buncrana, one in Letterkenny, and one now in Bundoran. We started off in Letterkenny only, I think, 3 years ago, and now we have three teams up here. So, yeah, it's going very well. I mean, we meet on Tuesday night, and we basically just, I suppose, everyone in the room has a lived, shared experience of a suicide. You know, and it doesn't matter if you've lost somebody, you know, a week ago or 20 years ago, you know, everyone's welcome.
Paul, I mean, obviously, the commonality here, if you lose someone by suicide or you lose someone in another, like by a collision or after a long illness or whatever it might be, is the grief and the loss, okay?
Yeah.
What is there, everyone's individual, but is there a layer of other emotions in dealing with a suicide, and can you get a sense as to what they often are?
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, death is, you know, when you lose somebody, you know, you're going to have, everyone has some sort of grief. I know suicide is, for me, suicide is one of the worst ways to lose somebody, because the questions that you ask afterwards, you're never going to find out. You know, if somebody passed away by cancer, my mum died at 32 of cancer as well. So I know she died of cancer. She had an illness and she died. My sister was 32. She took her own life. So many questions, you know, myself, a lot of guilt, a lot of anger. You know, why wasn't I there for her more often? Why, you know, all of these questions.
And I presume in talking it through, really, a lot of it's getting to the point whereby there's an awful lot of stuff we aren't in control of, that we simply have to accept there aren't answers to. There are questions there are simply no answers to.
100%, absolutely. And look, we all have a lot of things going on, and we don't, you know, I think the world is getting to be a better place when people are talking now more about their emotions and about their problems and about stress and anxiety. 10 years ago, you weren't allowed to talk about anxiety if you're a man. Not you weren't allowed to talk about it, but it was a no-go area, you know. Up until the 80s, it was illegal. It was an illegal act to die by suicide. You weren't allowed to be buried in the church.
The phrase commit suicide is rooted in it being a crime. A crime, so to speak.
Yes, and that language and that's is why taken. I think the language, the language is important as well. I didn't know this as well. I used to say, you know, we say now died by suicide as opposed to committed suicide, you know, because committed kind of suggests that there was some sort of crime involved.
The language just hasn't really caught up, How do I ask this question in the most sensitive way? And it is only a question. I don't have the answer and it's not loaded. Is there any consideration or balance to be struck in some way having remembrances and what have you? And it's very important that we remember people. But I'm also sort of thinking too about, you know, some of the phraseology and what we use on Facebook. If it for some people, maybe could encourage them to do it in that. Do you understand where I'm going?
Yeah,
with this question?
Triggering. I think the word you're looking for is triggering.
But also that in a way it's acceptable. I don't know what the right way of describing it is, but do you know, the default is always that the person is at rest, at peace in heaven with the angels. And then when we have these types of things, is that anything we need to consider a factor? I'm not saying we shouldn't do this, don't get me wrong, Paul, but I'm sort of working through this myself as a broadcaster.
I understand where the question is coming from. And look, I mean, I think the more we talk about these things, the more acceptable it is to talk about the problems and to talk about, you know, the ideology of that. And I firmly believe that my uncle had a saying, and it was, you know, there isn't a door in the whole world where you don't have a problem behind it. And everybody has problems, and we all have problems. I think it's good to remember the names of the people who have died by suicide, as opposed to 20, 30 years ago, you weren't allowed to talk about them. You had to brush
exactly.
it under the
That's
carpet.
It. That's the balance, exactly. You're getting straight to the core of it.
Yeah, exactly. And personally, I think the more we talk about it, the less people will die by suicide.
And it opens the conversation to talk to people, to reach out and things. Okay, good. As I said, I wasn't coming at that loaded. It was actually just I want to figure out in my own mind, and I'm sure listeners are on that journey with us. Right, there is a special remembrance event. It's in Buncrana. It's in the Inishowen Gateway Hotel on Sunday, the 17th of November at 2 p.m. with the hashtag Say Their Name. And I think it's really important to remind people out there that anyone would prefer to take a call, have a conversation, than go to your funeral. So if you feel that you would benefit from speaking to someone, and we all benefit from speaking to someone, please do, be it me, a friend, a family member, whoever it might be. And there are problems with the mental health services in this country, don't get me wrong, but there are also immediate supports there for you if you need them. And it's so important to just make that call or have that conversation or open that conversation whilst you have the opportunity to do so, Paul. Anything that you want to add to that, just to make sure that message lands?
Yeah, no, look, I totally agree with that. I mean, I was in the same boat many years ago. You know, I with problems problems with life problems. I've never thought about taking my own life. But I mean, I think we all have a fleeting thought every now and again. One of my friends, when my sister died, he said, "Look, I've thought about it, but it was only after a really bad day, and it was a fleeting thought. Not a planned event or not, you know, anything like that. But yeah, I mean, talk to somebody. There are lots of, you have Pieta out there, you have the Samaritans, you know, we are there as well. Please come along on Sunday. If you don't want to come along on Sunday because some people don't like talking about it, you can join online. So if you go on to hug.ie,
and everyone is going to engage with services like Hug when it's right for them. My suggestion is if you can find it in yourself to do so as soon as possible in the process. Would you concur?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think so. But do when you're comfortable with doing it, because you know, and we all look. People come on a Tuesday night, and the odd person doesn't speak the whole way.
All right.
They just listen, and that's okay to do as well.
Yeah, I have to nip off now, Paul. Listen, people can go search HUGG on the website on the internet. Sorry, you'll get to where you need to be. But get along to the Inishowen Gateway Hotel on Sunday at 2 p.m. Thanks so much for that. I really appreciate it. Okay, take care of yourself. We are back tomorrow morning with the Friday panel, That's Entertainment, and some very exciting launches. So please come back tomorrow morning at 9. But for now, stay safe.